Hey everyone, it's Beverly Hallberg. Welcome to a special pop-up episode of She Thinks, your favorite podcast from the Independent Women's Forum, where we talk with women and sometimes men about the policy issues that impact you and the people you care about most. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to She Thinks. I'm a former University of Pennsylvania swimmer, Paula Scanlon, and it is my great pleasure to be here today to talk about women's sports with two of the hockey world's greatest female Olympians, Jocelyn Lamoureux-Davidson and Monique Lamoureux-Morando. Most hockey fans know the Lamoureux twins as winners of two Olympic silver medals and an Olympic gold medal, as well as multiple world titles. But the twins are also widely respected for their work off the ice, fighting for equality in women's sports. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me to talk about that fight.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so first let's talk a little bit about your background. I know you guys are the only girls of a family of six kids. What was that like growing up with four older brothers, all of whom who also played hockey?
Well, I think we're the youngest of six, and we have four older brothers, and we're all within 5.5 years of each other. So we're all in a tight time frame. And so growing up, it was chaotic, but we always wanted to do what our brothers were doing, and we're always tagging along. So you could say we were so-called tomboys, or we just ended up gravitating towards a lot of sports growing up. But it was a competitive household, and we learned from a very young age that we had to be tough and had to be resilient. And I think that kind of transferred over into our athletic careers as well.
That's awesome. I mean, I can definitely understand that, wanting to play sports and do things like your brother. But did you guys try any other sports before hockey, or when did you make the decision to just focus on hockey primarily?
Yeah, we played a ton of sports growing up. So we played like any sport you can think of, a lot of team sports, did swimming, dance, ballet, baseball, soccer, all that. And we did a lot of the sports we competed with boys, but hockey was always kind of the main sport we gravitated towards. Our dad played at the University of North Dakota, so he played Division I hockey, and our mom was a swimmer, but it was just kind of always our favorite sport, but we did play a ton of different things growing up.
Yeah, and I think, like, to piggyback off that, Jocelyn and I, we always gravitated towards team sports. So we did individual, we ran cross country in 7th and 8th grade, and swimming, obviously, in team sport, but individual sport. We just ended up liking the team aspect a little bit more. And then just all of us ended up, we had a pond across the street as well. So we ended up going outside and playing in the winter a lot, and just gravitated towards that. And we all ended up playing hockey. So,
yeah. So obviously women's ice hockey has really exploded in this country over the past decade, even, but when you guys were a lot younger, there weren't as many opportunities to play ice hockey. So how did you end up finding those opportunities to compete? I know you guys said you played a lot with men and on boys teams and played with boys, but I'm just curious how that kind of came to be, and you know, how you played with the boys, and if you did, and when it started kind of being more girl only teams.
So we actually didn't have a girls team to play on until we were like 12 or 13, but by the time we could play on a girls team in our hometown, we'd already been playing with boys, you know, our entire lives. So we played with boys until we went to high school. And that's just kind of what our normal was, with how we grew up with brothers, and they always had their friends over. But we would occasionally go play in girls tournaments in the Minneapolis area, and Minnesota, Minneapolis, they have a ton of girls that play. So we got exposed to playing with girls at, I would say, like a middle school age. And when we went to high school, was our first true, like, playing on a girls team experience. But I would say playing with the boys really set us up for success, just because of how we had to compete every single time, because boys never want to lose to girls. So it really prepared us to be ready to compete at an elite level from a collegiate and a national team level.
Yeah, and so when the rules have since changed for USA Hockey, but we actually ended up playing like 3 years of checking with the boys. And so now if we were that age now, we would have only gotten 1 year with them. But So our sixth and seventh grade years, we started checking with the boys, and we were probably middle of the pack size wise. And then when we went into our Bantam year or eighth grade year, we went from being like middle of the pack to smallest on our team because all the boys started hitting puberty. And we knew at some point we'd have to transition over to girls hockey just because we knew it was going to become a safety issue of us just getting hit really hard or getting a cheap shot. And we, like, it was more of becoming like just holding your own out there instead of just like playing and like playing to your strengths and using your skills and whatnot. And it came like that certain aspects in certain games, there's more of like protecting ourselves, and that wasn't how we were going to develop into better players. So
I love how simply you put that. Obviously there's a lot of controversy with that going on, and you just perfectly laid that out in exactly yeah. how men and women are different athletically in two sentences beautifully. So obviously you guys have both been advocates for sex equality in sports. What role would you say that Title IX played in your career, and what role do you think that it's played in the growing game of women's only ice hockey?
Well, I think Title IX has, well, in the last 50 years, now that it has potentially been, you know, finagled with, we'll see what happens. But in the last 50 years, it's changed the trajectory of women's sports and the opportunities that girls and women have growing up. I mean, you can see it in how I think the soccer and basketball are great examples of you build it, they will come. I think hockey is like the next big team sport coming up. But
well, you see it with those sports because now it's had a generation to develop. And I think, like Jocelyn said, like that now hockey's kind of like that next sport that's really starting to develop into that, we hope. So
yeah, and so you look at the opportunities that girls have at the collegiate level. Well, that then grows it from a youth level. And then now that there's professional sports, it's just you have that whole spectrum of girls and women's playing their lifespan of their career. And so without Title IX, that doesn't happen. It's crazy because our mom was a swimmer growing up, but she talks about how the girls had one lane to swim in the pool, and the men or the boys had the rest of the lanes to swim in. And now, like, we never had to experience that in some of our sports growing up, but I've talked to some older friends or moms of our friends, and they didn't have any opportunities to play sports. And so just, you know, looking at our daughters now, they're going to have every opportunity they can think of, and they're not going to think twice about the opportunities that they're going to have. And that's what we need to protect moving forward with the climate that we're in with youth sports and professional sports and what's going on today.
I think people forget how we're not that far removed from when Title IX started. And we're celebrating 50 years, but really that's like one, now two generations of people that are really benefiting from it. And I think it's when you get away from what it used to be like, and you just assume it's always been a certain way. I think that you get into a slippery slope when you start trying to backtrack a little bit or putting in rules in place that can really change something that has really made so much progress and had so much success for women.
I definitely agree with that. I know, like, it's right, because we weren't the generation necessarily that had to directly fight for that. It was more our parents and my grandparents' mm-hmm. generation. And I think it's so easy to slip away from those things. But obviously you two have always been fighters. Mm-hmm. And so I know in 2017 you led the fight for better pay benefits for female hockey players. So what led you guys to take on that fight, and how were you able to organize and mobilize other women to sort of join that effort?
So we started playing on the national team in 2010, and that was our freshman year in college. We ended up graduating in 2013, went into an Olympic season, and then our post-collegiate national team career, we didn't have a professional team to play on, but we're still playing for the national team. And the two of us, we were working full-time, still playing on our national team schedule. And it had been a year, and we're kind of like, this is kind of ridiculous. We're trying to be be elite at what we're doing, but we're working full-time jobs, burning the candle at both ends. And so
like half of our team's doing
that. Yeah, along with our leadership group, we had sought out John Langle, who helped women's soccer in the 90s for 15 and until like 2012, I believe. Basically, we reached out and explained to them our situation, and you know, we weren't being paid. We knew that when the men's team, you know, was going to events, there was a lot different accommodation. So it wasn't just about pay; it was about equitable support. And the term equity and equitable and equality kind of gets interchanged. And so I think it's important to differentiate, like in our experience with the national team, you're not working with professional athletes. It's not a professional league and a business. It's your national governing body. And so they're supposed to provide the same opportunities and the same support financially. What the men get, the women should get, what the boys get, the girls should get. And so that's what we were fighting for. If the men have a chartered flight to their world championship, the women should have a chartered flight, not sit in the back of the plane, which is what had happened a few times. And so that's what we were fighting for. And we were fighting for some semblance of pay. So our obligation as far as camps and time to USA Hockey was a lot greater than what the men had because they were playing in the NHL. And so we're taking time off work, essentially losing money playing for Team USA. So that's really what we fought for. And between, you know, the two of us, our leadership group and our entire player pool essentially threatened to boycott a world championship that was going to be on home soil in 2017. And through that threatened boycott, we were able to reach a four-year agreement with USA Hockey. And then since then, it's been, I think, extended once or twice. And it's really changed the landscape of women's hockey, which then has, I think, propelled women's hockey into now what is, there's a professional league. And so we had a small part to play in that, but it was really something that I think is going to change the opportunities for girls playing hockey. Not just in the US, but in the world.
Yeah. And I think when she says that we threatened to boycott, it was to put a little more context. So none of us got on our flights to go to camp, for our pre-worlds camp. So we were on the phone with not just our team, our entire player pool. And then none of us went to camp. And then that also included USA Hockey trying to replace all of us and put together a second or a third team. They were calling high school players, Division III players, like any American born player, what seemed like club players. And so we ended up, so we had a 12-hour negotiating meeting in Philadelphia with our lawyers. There was 11 of us in the room, 11 players. And then the Cliff Notes version, we ended up signing our contract and then showing up 2 days before the tournament, had one practice together as a team, and then ended up going on to win the tournament. So it was, we knew like, okay, we signed these contracts, we got to go out and win. And it was like, kind of like put up or shut up time. And just knowing like the pressure that was on us to perform in that moment, I think was kind of said all we needed to say, like, hey, we're worthy of this. And we it's been enough time to go without. And so it was for us, probably a highlight of our career being able to go through that as a group. So.
That's awesome. I mean, I know, you know, in any experience, unity amongst the entire team and everyone is so important. So I think it's amazing that you were able not just to do that and make that decision for yourselves, but also to mobilize your entire team. And the fact that they were trying to replace all of you really shows how successful and how united you all were.
Well, and I think you would have experienced it with what you went through it at Penn, just it, like if you pick off like one or two at a time, it makes it really hard to stick together as a group and to be able to accomplish anything. So like for us in our experience, like it was being able to stick, like we knew if we didn't stick together as a group, we weren't going to accomplish anything. So if anybody strayed away from what the goal was and what we were trying to accomplish, we knew it would all fall apart pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think we need more fellow female athlete empowerment. I think, and in my experience, again, there were so many girls who just couldn't do that and couldn't commit to standing in the group and couldn't commit to being on the same page. So I think that shows your leadership, that you were able to do that and make sure everyone was comfortable and make sure everyone was willing to do it and doing it for the right reasons to eventually win out, which is what you guys did. You went on and won the tournament, which is, I mean, I can't even imagine having one practice and then going and winning. That's crazy. You guys are awesome for that. And so Anyway, so obviously you guys ended up retiring from the sport of ice hockey a few years ago. You started a charitable foundation. So how are you continuing to support female athletes through your foundation?
So our foundation really, it's beyond sports. We're trying to give back in our home state, in our hometown in North Dakota. And it really is about serving underprivileged kids, underserved schools. And so like our first donation was to fund the free and reduced school lunch program in our hometown for a school year. And then it was COVID, and then there was a whole bunch of other issues with school lunches and kids getting meals. And so we helped fund some different programs for that. And so really our foundation, it's not just about sports. It's about making sure kids are able to, you know, get what they need during the school day, so that when they're at school, it's, you know, they can focus on learning and being the best student they can be. And we were able to travel the country with Comcast after we won the gold medal, and really had our eyes open to some unfortunate situations and unfortunate just learning experiences that kids have in the school day. You know, they don't have food or they don't have the right tools as far as like computers or internet service to be able to do their schoolwork. And so we really wanted to come back into our home state and our hometown and be able to provide just basic need items, basic tools for the school experience. And so that's really what our foundation is about.
Yeah. And when you look at kids who come from underserved communities or just come from rough backgrounds, the way out of those situations for most of those kids is through education. And so we try and help fill the gap. We try and figure out, we'll talk to different schools or different school districts and figure out, okay, what do, in Fargo, we actually donated, and in Grand Forks, we donated feminine care products, because they'll have girls
for the female bathrooms.
For the female bathrooms, yeah. In fact, we even have to say that. So because girls will end up, that can't afford, though, they'll end up not going to school for a couple days. So, because that, they're expensive to have the tampons and pads. And so it's a very real problem that low income families have. And so to be able to give back just in a basic way to help meet basic needs for people is really important to us.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think it's so important for you guys to always give back to the community you're from. I know that's something I try to do, again, having had the opportunities to be fortunate enough to go to college, to get an education, to do all the things. And so when I see athletes, and like not even just athletes, but successful individuals like yourselves, and I see that you also, you know, give back to the community that you're part of, I think that's so important and so inspiring. And I think definitely I would, you know, love when I see that happen, and I would love to see more successful people like yourself doing that and giving back to the communities that helped bring them up to who they are. So obviously we're going to talk a little bit about one of the hot issues that's happening in women's sports, which, I mean, if it's not obvious why I'm hosting this, we're going to get into it. But obviously we have this issue of transgender athletes competing on women's sports teams. So obviously, unfortunately, I experienced this myself at the University of Pennsylvania, where I was teammates with Leah, formerly Will Thomas. But what is your viewpoint on allowing athletes to compete in a sport based on their gender identity only?
Well, I'll preface the answer with, Monique and I both have our master's in kinesiology, which is human physiology. So we're, I would say, educated enough to speak on this, not just based on opinion, but it's, I think, inherently, you know, unfair to let biological men compete with women. And the fact that biological men and biological women has to be stated to clarify answers, but like men competing with women is not fair. And there's multiple reasons why from a physiological standpoint. My thesis was based on girls competing with boys in the sport of hockey and what benefits of that. And there are extreme benefits from a skill standpoint, from a tactical standpoint. And once puberty was hit, and in our own experience, it was like a year where like we were middle of the pack as far as size goes. And it was from 7th to 8th grade, that like 12, 13, 13, 14 year old gap or age is when we went from like the middle of the pack to the smallest quickly. And we were playing against boys that were like 6 feet tall in 8th grade. Physiologically, there's a lung capacity there. There's heart volume, which if you know, I can get into the weeds about like stroke volume as far as how your heart pumps blood to your muscles and all of that. But it's you can't reverse that. Once you go through it, you can't reverse that. Even if you're on testosterone suppressants, you still have what you got when you went through puberty. And so I think it's not fair, and it takes away opportunities. I used to be of the belief before this was like a huge mainstream conversation. What's the big deal of taking away one spot of a young girl, or not a young girl, but what if one person loses a medal spot? Well, it's not just that one girl that's an impact or one woman that's impacted. It's the podium. It's who qualified for the event. It's someone didn't make the team because of it. And it's a whole trickle down effect. But then beyond that, it's about creating safe spaces in locker rooms, in bathrooms, safe to even compete. I mean, that one field hockey player that got hit in the face with the ball, and you could hear it from the stands, is cringeworthy. And I have two young girls, and I wouldn't want to watch something like that and feel like, is it even safe for her to be playing right now? And so it's an unfortunate situation, but I think also parents need to start stepping up. There's so many examples and stories. It's like every week there's something new happening. But I think, you can't put your daughters in those situations, but also the adults making decisions to allow these things keep happening, need to make the decisions based on, instead of making one person feel comfortable, we need to make women feel safe, like they can compete and be in their space without it being uncomfortable or dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty well said. I think, like, for me, it's like, just from the experience that we had growing up, it was in hockey specifically, like it was starting to become a safety issue for us to play against boys once they hit puberty. And at the time when we were on the national team, I think everybody on our team except for one of our goalies grew up playing boys hockey. And so, and everybody had to make that transition in that same kind of time frame that we did, all because of the same issue of it was becoming a safety problem. And so I just think it's great that women's hockey now, like for us, women's hockey has grown where now girls have so many more opportunities where they have the opportunity to play on a girls' team from when they start at Termites all the way up. But when decisions are getting made and adults are making decisions that now put a group of girls or women in an uncomfortable situation or unsafe situation, I just think it's really unfortunate. Cause to me, I'm like, who's in the room making these decisions, and why isn't someone just saying like the logical, like common sense thing? So that's where I get like, it's really frustrating, especially like we're both moms now. Like I have a daughter and three boys. Jocelyn has two boys and two girls. And just from a parent standpoint, like I would never want to put my daughter in a situation like that.
Yeah, I appreciate your stance on that. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, you guys are in the minority of people speaking out against this. I know there's a handful of parents that get upset, but I think it's definitely a conversation to have and to be honest about and be open about and talk about how girls are being put into situations where they're unsafe and potentially could get injured for life. So you touched on it a little bit before, but do you guys believe that this male advantage can be eliminated with hormone therapy or testosterone suppressant? So do you think that there is any way to possibly level the playing field and have a male be able to compete against females fairly?
No. And I think I'm not an expert on the physiology on this, but I know WADA, the world, not WADA, that's anti-doping, the World Swimming Organization, they basically said if a male, a biological male, wants to compete with women, they have to go through it's puberty blockers and testosterone suppressants, so that you're making that decision when you're like 10, 11, 12. So I think they're indirectly...
Which is a whole other, that's a whole other tunnel
that's
to go
down.
That's
an indirect way of saying men are not going to compete with women, basically. But then when you go on puberty blockers and testosterone suppressants at that age, they're, you know, the research, I'm vaguely saying, I'm like, research shows, or, you know, what I've been able to gather for information from what I read and try and educate myself, is that you're creating a whole host of issues health-wise by doing that. It's not like you just hit the pause button and then hit play 5 years later when you make your decision. It's you're sterilizing yourself. I know there's like cardiovascular issues that are starting to arise, which is why European countries have totally stopped this medical practice. And so it, anyways, so like if a male goes through puberty and then you go on testosterone suppressants, so like my husband is 6'4". If he went on testosterone suppressants, he is not going to lose his lung volume, lose his, I mean, he won't, muscle-wise, is not gonna grow his muscles, but he's not gonna lose it all. He's not gonna lose his bone density. He's not gonna lose just his sheer strength and size. So
he's still gonna be
6'4", and he's still gonna weigh more than 200 pounds. So he would have a great advantage over any female hockey player in the world, regardless of how much if his testosterone went to zero. So I think people just in general, like especially non-athletes, just don't understand and just don't have a basic understanding of human physiology and what it takes to compete at a high level in athletics, and having an awareness of body mechanics and movement and strength and conditioning and what happens. I'm also a strength and conditioning coach. And so it's amazing what males, what young men, the gains they make once they hit puberty. Like it's like a snap of a finger. They wake up and you can tell which kids are hitting puberty and which boys are getting testosterone dumps in the summer because of the gains they make. Strength, the power. It's impressive and it's fun to watch. But from a fairness standpoint, there's no reversing that once they go through it.
Well, I think like even when we were training our last year, couple years of training, we would train in Grand Forks, and we trained in the elite group. So it had a couple college players, a couple junior kids that would have been in high school or end of high school, and then a couple pro players. And so we would train with them in the summers. And on the national team, Jocelyn and I were some of the most conditioned athletes on our team. We were one of the always in the top end with like the strongest. So we would always like the latter portion of our career, we always tested really well when we had our conditioning tests, whatever we were testing at the time. But like when we're going in the weight room and we're doing shuttles or we're doing lifts and we're lifting heavy, like, or doing like conditioning stuff, like those high school boys were stronger than us. They would be able to in any type of like physical capacity test, they would crush us. And we're 2-time, 3-time Olympic athletes in great shape. It's not to take anything away from us and what we've accomplished, but it's just a physiological difference in it. Like there's things that men can do that we will never be able to do, and vice versa. There's things that we can do that men will never be able to do. So
beautifully put. So obviously we mentioned a little bit about, so FINA is the governing body of swimming. We mentioned them briefly, right? They have this ruling where if you're on testosterone suppressant starting at like age 12 before you go through puberty, then you could technically compete as a woman once you're older. But again, slippery slope to allow young kids to make those types of decisions. But the various different athletic governing bodies have very different eligibility rules. So that might be the rule in FINA, but that's not actually the case everywhere. Part of the reason that that's happened is umbrella organizations like the IOC and the NCAA have just said each sport can make their own decision on
allowing responsibility to it.
Yes, exactly. So I know that you guys recently had an article in Newsweek where you called out the IOC and told them to set clear rules prohibiting males from competing in women's Olympic sports. So why do you think it's so important for the athletic community to speak on this issue and also speak with unity when we were trying to make a decision and have the IOC, right, have the same rule for every single athlete, not just by sports basis?
Well, I think it's, you can't change the rules like of sports and what's fair. And when I say change the rules, like I'm a big Jordan Peterson fan and like you talk about, oh, like what's fair. Okay. Well, if you're playing a game, you can't change the rules mid-game. The rules are what they are, and we compete at a level of what's fair, and it's agreed upon. Like, what, you know, if we're competing against each other, we agree upon what the rules are, and we agree upon what's fair, and you can't change the rules mid-season, mid-race, mid-game. And I think, in general, people agree that men competing with women is not fair, and now this is somehow changing. And I think the IOC and the NCAA have just punted the ball to someone else to make the decision so that they, you know, stay out of the controversy. But I think majority of people are on the page of what we're talking about. A lot of people don't want to speak out about it. A lot of people don't want to just, you know, be canceled. I don't know what I can get canceled from at this point, being a mom for my kids. Like, it's, I think, important, though, for these overarching, you know, NCAA, the IOC, the USOC, or, you know, whatever capacity, just do what's right. I don't want to say common sense, but it kind of is common.
Well, there was a boxing ruling that came out where they're going to allow trans women to compete against women. Well, you're letting biological men now box and fight against women. So like, in what world are we, this is, it's kind of like the Twilight Zone a little bit in my eyes, but it's just, you think, I don't like it. It just seems like logic has been like thrown out the window a little bit on some of the stuff, but like, people will probably see this and then they're going to think Joss and I are transphobic and come up with every like word in the book to say at us. But it's just like, I'm totally willing to sit down with someone on the other side of it and have a logical, constructive conversation about it. And I'm totally willing to hear what they're coming from. Like, I have my views on it, but I listened to Riley on this a little bit. I used to be of the thought of, okay, well, everybody deserves a chance to compete and play. I totally agree with that. And we have, do you just create like another category for trans people? Or, but then she makes a very good point. Like, everyone that's going to win that is going to be a biological male.
Right. So, and you're just placating to the issue of like the bigger issue of, yeah, you know, now you're creating a separate category. When Is there a third category? Like,
so it's,
and
yeah. We've, in the places they've tried it, there has been instances where if you look through the Olympia running, like marathon running has this issue. So everybody who wins that third category is male or a female who's taking testosterone.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it really just, it's another opportunity for people who are male bodied or people who are taking hormones that would otherwise be illegal in the women's category to win. So,
And I've heard the argument of like, okay, there's the spectrum of like women have certain amount of testosterone and it's the spectrum of like, some have more, some have less, same with men. So then you get like on the ends of the spectrum, there's probably some overlap of some women might have the same amount of testosterone of some men. And that overlap is very small. So then I've heard some people argue, well, if you have the same amount of testosterone, it's fair. It's fair. Well, no, it's totally different and it's totally not the same and it's not fair still. So it's just, you can't recreate a category.
It's so black. It's black and white. You're trying to make it gray to like appease people. And I just think when you start, in this instance, when you're starting to go down that road, it's just like, then at what point does it end?
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, you guys are so impressive. You have masters. You're like, you know, the human body, you're Olympians, your mothers. You guys are some of the most impressive women I have ever spoken to in my life. And so not only that, it means a lot that you have a voice to speak up on this. So just one last thing. What would you guys give advice to anyone that is going through this, whether they be someone who's my age, whether it be a parent, whether it be a high school student that's going through this issue of wanting to speak out against males competing and taking their opportunities, but they're scared. I think that words of encouragement are always welcome, especially from such accomplished, successful women like yourself. So I just want to get your thoughts on what you would say to them.
I mean, I would say as a parent, you do what you need to do to protect your children. And normally your gut instinct is the right one. So it's, you know, don't put your, if it, for most cases it's going to be your daughter, don't put your daughter in dangerous or uncomfortable situations, and protect your children, protect the sport. And don't be afraid to, I think, unfortunately, don't be afraid to say what probably 95% of the people, 99% of the people in the room are thinking.
Yeah. I think it, I feel bad for this younger generation, whether it's high school and in your situation, college athletes who are put in a position where they feel like they have to stand up to the adults in the room. And then you look at some high school instances where it's, if a team refuses to play against another team that has a trans woman on the team or a biological male on the team, then they end up having to like forfeit their season or forfeit games, and they get put in a lose-lose situation, because what, now you're making them decide whether they're getting to play and compete now. So I would say it's, especially for young kids and you're in that situation, it's like Jocelyn said, like your gut feeling's usually the right one, but don't be afraid to stand up and be the one that has to say something, because In especially in this case, there's a few voices that are really loud voices right now, but the majority is probably thinking the same thing you're thinking and just doesn't have the courage yet to stand up and say something.
Exactly. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time. I know that you have many things you're part of, being mothers, helping kids who are underprivileged, whatever it might be. So I really appreciate the time. So thank you guys so much for joining She Thinks today. And I hope that in the future we'll hear more from you and continue to hear your voice on this fight for equality and fairness in women's sports.
I think it's fair to say thank you to you too, because what you did last year by coming out and taking a stance and what you guys had to go through, I think is important. It was brave and courageous. So from moms of little girls, we say thank you to you too. So
I really appreciate that. I mean, sometimes it's the right thing is the right thing, no matter what the consequences are. And so I think, you know, everyone needs to remember that.
Yeah. Thank you.